Hey, go-getters, let Noom Sport Hydration Tablets power up your fun and keep you ready to move. Simply drop, dissolve, and enjoy crisp and refreshing flavors like strawberry lemonade or lemon lime. With 5 essential electrolytes and crafted with clean, non-GMO, vegan, and gluten-free ingredients, Noom should be your go-to hydration choice. Because when you're hydrated, you can do more, go further, and recover quicker. Shop now on noonlife.com and get ready for endless fun, because anything can happen after noon.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's John Lefoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
She said, get out the chat room and clean my
Glad stretch. Feeling fine, so fresh.
The Glad Girl Group coming at you with a throwback jam. That was Glad Force Flex Drawstring Trash Bags featuring Pine Sol Original Scent. And that's better than all good. It's all Glad.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on Auto Trader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's your favourite football podcast, back for another week. And today we are picking our Premier League team of the season. Now, you might think that's a little bit premature, if you will, considering that this title race doesn't look like it's over just yet. But it felt like an opportune time to have a look at the Premier League team of the season. Next week, we're going to look at European team of the season. So it feels like that part of the year. My name is Jack Collins, and I'll be your host today. And joining me, as ever, my co-host, Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Hello, mate. Yeah, I'm good. I mean, look, if you haven't shown yourself over like 34, 35 weeks of a season, you're leaving it a bit late to try and get in a team of the season, aren't you, to be honest? So I think that by this stage, you should have shown your true colours and shown that after 35 game weeks, you're there. You're not only in contention, but you're in that team. Now, of course, there'll be a few arguments of the game changes, particularly that could put up a show in the last 2 weeks of the season to make the difference. But I'd say about half the team is nailed on. I think most people would have half the team exactly the same. But there are some interchangeables here that are really up in the air. Like, I don't think there's an obvious goalkeeper or an obvious striker, which is really weird.
Yeah, we're in a strange situation, I think, with the team of the year. And also, it's a weird one because obviously it's so subjective. Everyone has their own opinions about who should be where. As much as it's about how your performance have been, I also think there's a level of exceeding expectations that probably should be taken into account when a player is being judged against what they are and what their expectation levels are. So we're going to come on to all of that. But before we do, I wanted to do a thing I love, not things we love, because this weekend, as those of you who listen to our Patreon will already know, I fulfilled a lifelong ambition. I got to Naples. And I got to the Maradona, or formerly the San Paolo, to see a Napoli game. And DJ, I just wanted to talk about the city. To be honest, the game was brilliant. I watched a 2-2 draw in the Derby del Sole against Roma. It was a really fantastic second half, a bit of a slow burner first half that exploded into life. Napoli probably should have won. They were the better team. But the experience in the stadium was amazing. But the city is one of the most phenomenal places I have ever been in my time on this planet. Now, we've seen some pretty special places going to watch football. We've wandered around in Bilbao. We've made a documentary about how incredible the city is and what the football club means to the place. I've been to some places where football feels like everything, but nowhere touches the sides of how it feels in Naples. It is just magisterial. Everywhere you walk, there are Napoli banners, there are flags, there are murals. Everything in the entire city is geared towards football. It's like the lifeblood, the heartbeat of the city.
Sounds like Newcastle United.
Around the football team. Like, but so much more in your face. Like, everything is blue and white. Everything. And I can't explain. You walk down the main streets, the main shopping streets, you know, all of the fancy bits. There are still Napoli flags everywhere. There are murals of Diego Maradona on the walls. And look, talking of Maradona, this was part of it. And those of you who have been listening for a long time will remember that I did a big old Napoli and Maradona tribute when he died. And so to get there and see the kind of tributes to him and the wall art and all of it was really quite emotional in many ways. But he is more than an icon. You know, you speak about cities and you say about Newcastle there, and I absolutely take your point. And Alan Shearer is an icon, and Francesco Totti is an icon of Roma, and all of these things. Mm-hmm. It helps. It's a, you know, obviously a one club town or one club city, in that they're everywhere else in Italy, really, where you go, the major cities at the very least, there are two teams. There are two teams in Milan. There are two teams in Turin. There are two teams in Rome. There are two teams in Genoa. But when you get to Napoli, it is one. Everybody is behind one football club. And it's quite overwhelming in many ways. And you get to this sort of Maradona era. And obviously, Maradona was a man who took Napoli from being sort of a middling club in Serie A to the championship. They were the first team from the south to go and win the title since, I think, Cagliari in the 70s, when he won it at the end of the 80s, start of the 90s. And then, obviously, there was this massive fall-off after Maradona's golden era at Napoli. And probably the best football, you'd argue, that he ever played in his club career came in Naples. But he is not just an icon in the way that Totti is an icon in Rome, or that Alan Shearer is an icon in Newcastle, or Iribar is an icon in Bilbao. He's like a demigod. He's like a patron saint. Like, yeah. People in Naples, I think, pray to San Gennaro, who is the local saint, and to Diego Maradona. Those are the two things. There is a bar, or a coffee bar, where they have a lock of his hair in this ensconced glass case that rotates constantly on a pedestal. It's like a church. There are murals of Maradona next to these little window portals to the Virgin Mary, Madonna y Maradona, if you will. And looking at it all in these kind of lights, I just loved every second of it. The place breathes and lives football. It just feels constantly like it's on everybody's mind. And look, when I said I was going to Naples, there was a lot of people being like, I'll be careful. It's a little bit rough around the edges. And it is, right? It is a little bit rough around the edges. But at no point did I feel like with anyone, I couldn't have a conversation about Napoli, or have a conversation about Maradona, about what this team stood for. And look, it's probably a very good time to go. Not necessarily that this season's been great, but the afterglow from being champions again after so long felt like it was still very much alive in the streets. But just one of the most incredible, magical places that I have ever been to. And I absolutely loved every second of it.
Yeah, I was hoping you would give us a bit more of that, mate. Obviously, on the, when we did Monday's Patreon, you were still in Naples.
It was a little bit sketchy, the Wi-Fi.
We went on the best. It's not the best pod we've ever done quality-wise, because the Wi-Fi wasn't made for recording. But yeah, I thought, I bet he hasn't said everything he wants to say. And especially because you were still there. Now you're back, you're reflecting on it a bit more. And you're like, how much do you want to get back? When do you reckon you'll go back?
I don't know, because it's one of those places. And, you know, obviously Lucy and I travel quite a lot together, and we're lucky enough to be able to do that around Europe. And we try to sort of keep it fresh, go to new places, etc. So yeah. when I, the idea of going back, I almost want to be like, okay, I want to go back and do something slightly different, maybe with a couple of friends, maybe a couple, you know, maybe we can go and do some work there. You never know your luck. But I'd love to get back for a Champions League game. So that might be a while, considering where Napoli are in the league right now. But I think that when you just feel a place in the way that, you know, I like to get involved with the currency, the heartbeat of what the city revolves around, right? No matter where you go, it's good to try and get a feel for it and try and get involved. And it allows you to talk to people and have those conversations with random people that you meet, you know, people who are in restaurants with you, people who are in bars with you. You can sit and just chat to them about, you know, various different things, depending on where you are. Every single conversation reverted back to Calcio. Almost immediately. I was like, oh, okay, cool. We're doing this, are we? And so that kind of experience and the kind of dial into how much the city loves football and how much obviously the club loves the city and all of the kind of surrounding bits of it, all of it felt so loved. So I hope I'm back soon, but it might be a little while.
Yeah, no, very good, mate. I'm glad you got it fulfilled everything you dreamed it would be.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Also, like, the entire city's a party constantly. It's, you know, we were leaving yesterday and after we recorded, Lucy and I went for some lunch before we went back to the, before we went back to the airport, and it was about 11:45 local time. And we walked past the first bar and there was someone singing Freed from Desire on karaoke. There were people smashing out spritzes in the streets. I was like, this is excellent. I enjoy this very much. I think I would die if I lived here for too long, but it was an incredible experience nonetheless. It was just so much fun. And I loved it and highly recommend it to anyone who's thinking about visiting Naples. Very much worth your time. A truly magnificent place. So shouts out to Napoli.
Good stuff.
Right. After the break, we are going to dive headfirst into this team of the year because there could be a fair bit of discussion. Don't go anywhere.
Hey, go-getters. Let Noom Sport Hydration Tablets power up your fun and keep you ready to move. Simply drop, dissolve, and enjoy crisp and refreshing flavors like strawberry lemonade or lemon lime. With 5 essential electrolytes and crafted with clean, non-GMO, vegan, and gluten-free ingredients, Noom should be your go-to hydration choice. Because when you're hydrated, you can do more, go further, and recover quicker. Shop now on noonlife.com and get ready for endless fun because anything can happen after noon.
For 25 years, Mike's has been making lemonade the hard way. Mike's Hard Lemonade. Hard days deserve a hard lemonade. Mike's is hard. So is prison. Don't drive drunk. Premium all beverage with flavors. All registered trademarks used under license by Mike's Hard Lemonade Company, Chicago, Illinois.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.
Hey, parents. Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Welcome back to Ranks FC, and it's time for the main thrust of this podcast. We're going to be talking the Premier League team of the season. We're going to go through it, Dean, position by position, I think, and try and work it out. Now, it might not match up perfectly because we might have gone for different formations, but we both picked ourselves a team. We're going to have a little discussion about players that could fit into those positions and also try and raise an alternative option for each of these positions. So you said in the first part that there was no obvious goalkeeper. Who are you going for between the sticks?
It's very weird, isn't it? Because like with Arsenal and Man City going head to head for the title, normally you would assume that one of those clubs would have the goalkeeper of choice. And they don't. They just don't. You know, City have obviously had problems with injuries with Edison. Yep. And David Raya, I think he's definitely an improvement on Ramsdale, but I don't think he's been the best goalkeeper in the division.
He's going to win the Golden Glove, I think. And sometimes that's seen as the kind of arbiter of perfection. But I think considering the narrative that's followed Raya throughout the season, and look, again, I agree with you. I think that Arsenal have upgraded here, and also that Raya has actually probably been better, especially in the second half of the season, than most people have given him credit for. But I still don't think he's quite in this conversation. And I know that's going to sound mad, and Arsenal fans will undoubtedly already be raging at this because he is going to win the Golden Glove. But I think so much of that is down to Arsenal's defence rather than actually the man between the sticks.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, he has kept the most clean sheets, but he also has an amazing team in front of him. He's had the best defence probably in front of him. So it made me think differently. And I was like, okay, where am I going with this? Who do I actually think has been the best goalkeeper and who could really make an argument for this? And I was torn between two. At one end of the table, there's Emi Martinez at Aston Villa. And at the other end of the table, it's Jordan Pickford at Everton. Yeah, he has 12 clean sheets. Jordan Pickford has 12 clean sheets this season. Like, how? He's actually been... He's obviously had some Jordan Pickford moments, which are to be expected.
All goalkeepers are crazy.
He's a loose cannon, right? He's a loose cannon. So we'll have some weird moments in the season. But Jordan Pickford has actually had a very, very good season. But Emi Martinez is the one I kept coming back to. And I was like, do you know what? In a general football perspective, I don't think he's been talked about a lot at all. But I think that's because there have been so many other standout things going on at Aston Villa this season. But if you were to go back and watch all the big moments that have come through in Villa's season, the amount of times that Emi Martinez had made saves before that moment to allow that moment to even open up is a lot. He's made a lot of big moments. Now, his biggest moment was obviously in Europe with the penalty shootout, and I don't know whether we can necessarily count that because we're doing a Premier League team this season, but I also can't forget it. And if this season I could have chosen a goalkeeper to have on form, I think I'd choose Emi Martinez, mate.
So I was torn between three, and you've named two of them. I think Pickford is definitely worthy of serious inclusion in this conversation. And you look at the table, the only teams that have conceded less than Everton are the top three. That's absolutely incredible for a team. Yes, okay, the points deductions have played to it, but who have been battling relegation until very, very recently. So you kind of get to that point, you're like, wow, that really is a quite remarkable display. He's the person I had earmarked, but just ahead of Emi Martinez. And I also think you could make an argument for Guillermo Vicario in his first season at Tottenham, who's come up with some unbelievable moments. He's actually conceded, you know, the same amount of goals as Emi Martinez. So when you come to them, yes, and he's actually played two games less. So there's that to consider. And obviously, we're recording this on Tuesday. He might have shipped four against Chelsea tonight, and this conversation might feel a bit moot. But I think that he's worthy of mention at the very least. But I went Pickford because I think that Jordan Pickford is the reason that Everton will be in the Premier League next season. And without him in goal and without what he's actually produced at the back, they would have been relegated. So I erred for Pickford, but equally, I absolutely appreciate that Martinez has been brilliant. He is such a heartbeat of the way that Aston Villa play. He's such a, you know, character and a leader in that team as much as anything else. So I think that there's very little between the two at the very top.
Yeah, look, if Alisson hadn't have suffered his hamstring injury, I wonder if I would be going for Alisson, to be honest. But he missed a big chunk.
Way too much of the season, I think.
And it was just too much for me in the end. Like the amount of matches he missed, like eight matches in the Premier League just in one spell, and over the course of the season, he's missed 10 of Liverpool's 35 games. So I haven't gone for Alisson for that reason. But yeah, I think that I'm fine with that. I think Pickford is, it feels like a strange choice, but for some reason, I think it's the right choice.
Yeah, I think it might be. And look, all credit to Martinez, all credit to Aston Villa. But I think that in terms of where a team are in the table compared to where they might be with someone else in there, Jordan Pickford has perhaps made the most impact for me. So I think maybe he goes in between the sticks. If you've used that three times now, I'm going to stop saying between the sticks.
Mate, right back. Okay. I mean, I'm assuming you're doing a four-man back line.
Yeah. I think it's probably the easiest way to work this out.
I don't think I can see past Ben White.
No, me neither. I really wanted to make an argument for.
I can't. I tried. I wrote down. I was like, okay, I'm going to go through these. Let's go through all the good right backs. Anyone that's also had a good, you know, I was going for it. Right, Trent. No, he can't win this. Walker.
I think at Christmas, Trent was probably leading this conversation.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
The amount of games again missed here and such and a also spell positional out.
Changes
and also the fact that, you know, Connor Bradley has come in there and been so good as well. You know, one of those things that you just kind of turn away from it. I think Ben White has established himself as a standout candidate. Obviously, Kyle Walker usually in this conversation, but hasn't been at his sparkling best, perhaps. I think Ben White is the obvious candidate. And also the move from centre back out to right back is a very difficult one. And he's made it look relatively easy, I think. And considering he started the season at centre back, you know, to have dropped back into that right back position, Urien Timber was signed realistically, we think, to play in that right back position and to kind of move Ben White inside or work out what that looked like. And with the injury, he's moved straight back out there and he's had an absolutely phenomenal season. I this was the position I think I found hardest to find an alternative candidate for.
So consistent, Ben White. Like, so consistent in that position. And so unfazed by the fact that he was having to play out there all of the time. I found it impressive. Also, he's been carrying an injury for a lot of the season. And that doesn't seem to have put him off his stride. He's always been making himself available. And at the same time, he's also been dealing with this England problem where people have been questioning whether he even likes football, why he is not making himself available for the international team. And at the time of him not making himself available to England, there was a few people who were like, "We talk about it, wouldn't get in the team anyway." I was like, why? Why would Ben White not be a contender to be playing for England this summer? No, not typically you wouldn't Southgate to pick him there, but if you were looking at form, it should be Ben White. I think he's been sensational. So impressive on every level. You know, the way that he's able to get forward, the way he's contributed to Arsenal as an attacking force, but also been so reliable out there. You just can't knock it. I can't really think of anyone that would expect to be in that team ahead of him.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that there is only one man for this right back slot, and it's Benny Blanco, Ben White, who feels like a lock, I think, at this point. So yeah, shouts out to Ben White. Which takes us into centre back. Maybe we should do both of these together.
Mate, I don't know how to look beyond Arsenal. This is the biggest struggle, like, because the best central defensive partnership is Saliba and Gabriel. And how do you separate them? This is the thing. If you're not going to have a 3 out of 4 man Arsenal defence, who has been undeniably better than one of those players, and which one would be nudged out? That's honestly been my struggle. In the list of named candidates, I thought, well, Shah's had a good season at Newcastle. Van Dijk's had a good season at Liverpool. I don't think there's any dying. Look, Joachim Andersen at Crystal Palace, I think, has had a brilliant season. I've been impressed by him. Romero at Tottenham deserves to be in the conversation. And of course, Man City.
Mickey van der Ven as well, right?
Mickey van der Ven.
Maybe that injury is just probably pushed him out of the conversation, but a brilliant first season.
Villa, you had Pau Torres come in and like start to really change the way they defended. There was a lot of people that I was considering, but I don't know. I personally can't see past Gabriel and Saliba as the partnership in the team of the year and Ben White on the right side. So I don't know if you can, but I also want to see if you can, how you separate them and which one of those two drops out.
Yeah, it's a really difficult one in that Gabriel and Saliba have both come to the fore in different parts of this season, which I think is impressive and important when you're kind of looking at this. It's not like, okay, Saliba's been the outstanding candidate and Gabriel has been there alongside him. It's that, you know, you look at the games against Man City, you look at the way that Gabriel in particular handled Erling Haaland. I thought incredible in both of those games. I think that he's stood up in the big moments. Saliba you know, we say this before, but a Rolls Royce of a defender. Yeah, absolutely. 100%. When you're kind of looking at that, you kind of considering where they're at, they've both come up in different moments for Arsenal. And I think rather than just considering them as a partnership, you have to consider them on their individual merits. And both of them have done enough, I think, to justify being in the conversation, which makes it hard to split. And look, we spoke about Raya and why he wasn't included in the goalkeeper debate. And part of that is because this defence has been so, so solid. I think you could make an argument for either Man City centre-back. I think Ruben Dias has been very impressive again. Manuel Akanji as well, who's really stepped up next to him in the absence or when John Stones is playing either further forward, or he's also, you know, been out for periods of this season as well. So I think that either of those are worthy of nomination, but I can't recall the kind of standout performance. And look, maybe this is part of the fact that City are so dominant. And look, at this point when we're recording, still look favourites to win the league. And yet we're talking about this Arsenal defensive line, which really has stepped up here to be part of it. So I would love to make an argument, and I did really think about making the argument for Pau Torres, because I think his positional awareness and his ability to launch counters from the base of this Villa team is absolutely imperative to the way that Unai Emery's side play. I think that he has been phenomenal. And obviously the start of the season started a bit rocky, right? We talk about the fact that Pau Torres came in and got basically handled on that first game when he came on as a substitute against Newcastle. And it all looked a bit like our worst fears about Pau Torres' physicality in the Premier League were coming true. And yet, by January, when he's out of the side, Villa look like a completely different prospect. They don't function completely without him. So I think, again, you could make the argument. I just don't know which of Saliba or Gabriel you drop. And this sounds a bit mad, but I think if I was going to drop one of them, it would be Saliba.
Yeah, I think it probably is too, but I can't. I just can't separate them.
I would love to have Pau Torres in here. I really would, because I think that his adaptation to the Premier League, when I was concerned about the way he was going to deal with that transition, has been really, really, really impressive. But equally, this Arsenal defensive line have been just phenomenal across the course of this season. And I don't think it feels disingenuous not to put them as a partnership when they've been so good together.
Yeah, and I think when it comes to the actual team of the year, what's the most likely outcome of what you're debating right there? Like, Pau Torres isn't realistically going to get into that team, is it?
That's fine, but we're picking our team of the
year. No, I know, but this is, you know, I think that's how you start to really hone in on it. I think that a lot of people would still make an argument for Van Dijk, I'm convinced, but I can't. I think our defence is Ben White, Saliba and Gabriel.
All right. Can we move away from Arsenal at left back at least? Because there hasn't
left back
been...
I've got Zinchenko.
Who is your left back?
Anthony Robinson.
I thought this might come up.
I never ever thought I'd say it. But he's at least a contender. Anthony Robinson.
He's been the most consistent left back in, you know, going two ways in the Premier League this season, I think.
His defensive work has improved so much. He was already one of the most forward-thinking left-sided defenders. But, I didn't like him. Like, at the start of this season, I genuinely didn't want him at Fulham anymore. I'd had enough of seeing him bolt down the left, either make the wrong choice or lose possession, or be caught out of position and the ball goes in behind him. Where we sit at Fulham, there is a pole to my left side and Anthony Robinson always disappears behind that pole. And what I always say to Dylan is, like, expect the ball to be coming back around that area in a minute and Anthony Robinson to be chasing backwards after it and then to probably foul someone. And it hasn't really happened since about... Yeah, 2 months into the season, he's improved so much. And I struggle to see how he could not make the team. Now, the other two left backs that I think, look, one of the reasons he does is in contention is because a lot of left backs haven't been playing, right? So Luke Shaw, Andy Robertson, Ben Chilwell, like, they're all guys that you would expect to kind of dominate a left back conversation. And none of them have been playing enough, or when the likes of Chilwell have played, they haven't been good enough. So then you're like starting to whittle it down. And I'm like, okay, well, Arsenal don't have a left back contender in there. Guardiola is obviously starting to certainly make a name for himself and make an impact on the title. And
I've seen some shouts for Guardiola being in the team of the season. And I think it feels like real recency bias.
I don't think it's been long enough that he's been doing it.
Whatsoever that Guardiola is going to be an absolute superstar for City. And I've been saying that throughout. But I think that his performances in the last 2 months have started to be, you know, to the level of the player that I was expecting to come into this team. And actually, the adaptation period is fine. It's not a problem to have a period where you adapt to a season. But I think that, especially when you're moving from playing centre-back at your previous club to playing left-back at Manchester City, and it's a pretty specialised role. But I think that just because he's had a very good last couple of months doesn't probably take away from the fact that it did take him some time to settle. And there was nobody putting Guardiola in Team of the Year shout so far at Christmas. No. I think that's important to kind of know where you're at. I think there's maybe a case to be made for Ryan Aitnori at Wolves.
Yeah.
He's been sensational.
He has been,
Wolves have really kicked on. I think him is Robinson's biggest contender.
Him and Udogie, I thought, would be the two that I would probably have put forward. Now, with Aitnori, the problem is I don't see enough of him over 90 minutes. So this is also a bit biased because I literally watch Anthony Robinson 20-odd times a season for a full 90 minutes in person and have much more to judge him on and be impressed by. Guardiola, Udogie, you obviously see a lot more of them because I naturally have to watch pretty much every Manchester City game, most Tottenham games for the duration. And Wolves, obviously I watch them. Am I keeping a close eye on the entirety of Aitnori's performance? No, but you see the standout bits, and that's obviously what's leading to him being a contender to go to a bigger club for next season. You know, side starting to look at him as a transfer option. So I do think he is a legitimate contender, and the difficulty I have is knowing whether he is actually better than Anthony Robinson or not.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been a standout campaign for Robinson. And I think that Aitnori is right on the rise and has been very, very impressive throughout much of what I've watched this season. But again, I appreciate, and we're both going to appreciate that there
I can't believe it, mate.
Level of bias. Udogie, I think, has been really impressive. Obviously, he's not going to be out. He's out now for the rest of the season and potentially for the Euros as well, which is a massive hammer blow to Italy as much as it is to Tottenham. I just think that, you know, when we're kind of capable and what he's actually doing in these games, Udogie is growing into this. And I think by the time we get to next season, we'll be looking in firmly as one of the best left backs in the Premier League, if we're not already. Yeah. I think just in terms of consistency,
this is it.
Robinson's been remarkable.
This definitely is not bias because I am this man's harshest critic. Like even his parents wouldn't have been this critical of him at any point in his life.
You hope, anyway.
Not yet for a sec. Because I always had him down as the most consistently inconsistent footballer I'd ever seen at Fulham. And he's overcome that. And I am very, very impressed by how he's done that, to the extent that it wouldn't even surprise me if somebody like Liverpool did come and look at him as an option to be Robertson's backup or something, or rotator at Liverpool. So, yeah, Robinson's in. Unbelievable scenes.
It is absolutely unbelievable scenes. Hey, we had to get someone in there somehow. So there he goes. Anthony Robinson in at left back for Team of the Year, which finishes off our defence and takes us into midfield. Now, what have you gone for here? Have you gone for a three in the middle? Have you gone for a two with a three in front of them? What does this look like for you?
Yeah, it's a three, obviously, but it's one of them's at the front and the other two kind of sit side by side, but one of them has to sit. So you have a six, an eight, and a ten, basically.
All right. What have you got in your six?
Honestly, I don't think you all have the same three hit positions here, but this is going to be interesting. At the six, I've got Rodri.
Well, that was an
but that's because
one,
of who
I do
I've
have
got
the same player.
I've got alongside him. I'm just going to do the two together, to be honest. I've got Rodri and Declan Rice as my side by side midfielders. Declan Rice I just find it phenomenal how he has dealt with the step up, right? He's gone through a £100 million transfer. Everyone said he wasn't worth that. And he's helped transform Arsenal into legitimate title challenges with incredible consistency, unbelievable performances. His ball winning is absolutely sensational. He started 34 of 35 games for Arsenal this season and played them almost the 90 minutes for the majority of them. It's so hard to live up to a price tag when you cost £100 million. I think he's exceeded that price tag. I think he could have signed for £120 million and still look good value, Declan Rice. And I didn't expect to be saying that. I really didn't. When Declan Rice was breaking out at West Ham, I didn't think we were going to get to see a player at this level. But I always want to see Declan Rice alongside with someone that allows him a little more freedom. And Rodri would be that guy. Rodri can't not be in this team. Man City have lost 3 league games all season. Rodri missed all 3 of those games. We all know the impact that he has on this team. I said before, if you watch the Manchester City documentary on Netflix, the impact that Rodri has on that team, his winning mentality, is just a different level to what I even realised. He's an incredible leader. And he leads by example in the dressing room as well as on the pitch. Phenomenal player. Also weighs in with big moments when he comes and arrives on the edge of the box. I think he's been brilliant. And Rodri and Rice, I think it's hard to make an argument that there are better midfielders than that in the league. I mean, when I was digging, I thought, look, Alexis McAllister's had a really good season at Liverpool. Palhinha's had a really good season at Fulham. But if I'm looking for side-by-side midfielders, mate, these are the two I'm looking at.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm going to sway you on this. But I think that there's a case to be made for Douglas Luiz, Aston Villa.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
who was absolutely immense, especially in the first half of the season. Now, obviously, the productivity has dropped off a little bit in the second half, but he's still incredibly crucial to the way that this team runs. He's played only a few games less than Rice, and that's because he got a ban for yellow cards. So we're talking about a player who has been absolutely integral in Aston Villa's change from being, you know, a side who were knocking on the door of the Conference League to a side knocking on the door of a Champions League place. And his growth and the importance that he's gained in this side under Unai Emery are so, so important to the way that Villa run. I think that he is a worthy contender for that second spot. I agree with you. I think that when you're talking about City this year, we're talking about a team that have kind of found a way in the absence of huge performances from lots of, you know, the players that we've come to expect from City, right? Edison hasn't had the season that we've seen from him in years. Kyle Walker, as I mentioned earlier, hasn't been as good as I think that we've seen him in years gone by. John Stones has missed big parts of the season due to injury. Who's stepped up and been the guy for City time and time again? Rodri. And there's a reason that they're still favourites to win the league. And that reason, as far as I'm concerned, is Rodri. His leadership, his intelligence, the way that he plays football is the kind of heartbeat, is the Pep Guardiola of this City side on pitch. And what he does there is unmatched across the world, as far as I'm concerned, as a six. So there was no way I was going to leave Rodri out. But I did want to make a case for Douglas Luiz because I think he's been phenomenal and a really, really important cog in the kind of Villa upward trajectory. And I think that sometimes he goes unloved. And look, he's an ex-City player in many ways. Obviously, he came through at City, and when he was let go, there was a lot of talk about whether they'd bring him back or whether it's someone that they would, you know, want to have in the future. I could see a world where City do go back in for Douglas Luiz, given that the way he's performed this season. Also a shout for Mario Lemina. I think he's an honourable mention rather than actually someone who's going to break into this team. But he's been phenomenal for Wolves. Mm. He's done everything at different parts of this. He has been Mr. Versatile and sort of the heartbeat of that Wolves team for Gary O'Neill. I just thought he deserved at least a mention because he's been phenomenal.
Yeah, fair enough. So you've tried to get Pau Torres in, you've tried to get Douglas Luiz in. Next, you're going to try and get Leon Bailey or Ollie Watkins in. So I'll wait for your Villa bias to come through.
Weirdly, I really like this Unai Emery Villa team. Shock horror, Jack likes Unai Emery side. But they deserve immense credit. I think is the truth of the matter.
Look, mate, the man at the top of the midfield has to be Martin Odegaard.
Yeah,
I mean, what's tricky about this, to be honest, is that I would like Phil Foden to be there. But he can't be. Because Odegaard has to get that role. Like, that is his role now. He's got the Premier League title of having this attacking midfield role. He's got such a blend of beauty on the ball and elegance. The precision of his passing is absolutely exquisite. He's not often that he's not on the pitch, but when he isn't on the pitch, they miss it massively. And I think it's going to sound a bit weird because they've got like the likes of Saka in this team. I think he's the one member of that attacking unit that you can't replace. I just don't think Arsenal, when he's not in the setup, I don't think they can reach the same levels without him. I think if Saka's not there, you'll find a way to deal with it. You'll find a way to stick somebody out there and still be impactful. But when Odegaard is not on the pitch, look, when he went off against Aston Villa, went off in the 79th minute, and I'm not saying like Odegaard's substitution is the only reason that Arsenal ended up losing that game 2-0, but it kind of feels a little bit ominous that Villa ended up scoring in the 84th and the 87th minute. And they're like 10 of the only minutes that Odegaard has missed in like the entire season. I just can't really explain how important he is. He's also been, well, I talked about Rice having a bit more freedom. I feel like Odegaard also has more impact depending on who is the other midfielder in that three. And obviously they've had different options in there and I don't think they've got it right a lot of the time. But when Thomas Partey's come back in there, also feels like we're getting something a little bit different. And I think that Partey has been quite a big change to having Odegaard even more influential for Arsenal. Odegaard might even be the footballer of the year. That's how good I think he's been.
Yeah, I mean, the only argument I suppose you could make is that the output is slightly down, you know, 16 goals and assists combined from him across 32 games. Now, it's not bad by any stretch of the imagination. But if you were looking at stats alone, and look, I don't think you should ever do that, but you could probably make an argument if you wanted to that you could maybe get a Phil Foden, Bukayo Saka, Cole Palmer three behind a striker who've all had better outputs. But I agree with you. I find it very difficult to leave Martin Odegaard out considering the impact, the effect he's had. Also, I think something that goes underrated is his defensive work rate and what he brings to the side. And yes, as you say, he's nominally a 10 in this formation, but actually in so many ways, he's more than that. He brings such an all-round impact to this Arsenal side. And you see him covering, you see him tracking back down that right-hand side. You see what he does in terms of out of possession shape and building and allowing Arsenal to get back into possession and work with it. He's a phenomenal footballer and we're really starting to see the best of him, I think. So I would with you that Martin Odegaard gets in the side. I do worry that, you know, that's what, five Arsenal players in here. And if Arsenal don't win the league, that looks like a big, big, big chunk of Arsenal players for a side that might end up coming short.
I think when you consider that the run that Arsenal have been on since the new year, that they're being judged against absolutely extraordinary conditions. To have lost one game this calendar year and potentially not, and I think they've only drawn one as well, and to not win the league, be virtually unheard of. So that would not be at them dropping any standards. They would still be every bit as deserving as being in this team. They're just up against one of the greatest teams we've ever seen anywhere, and that's Manchester City.
But is that,
and
is
the problem with,
the
City,
thing with City is they feel like more of a kind of rotating cast, perhaps.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So they haven't had a standout star throughout the whole season, really, because Foden will go in and out of spells. De Bruyne will go in and out of spells. Haaland's gone in and out of spells. And that's, and there's been, you'll always vary up. Bernardo Silva, whoever, Alvarez. And that, what I've said there, Rice started 34 out of 35 games. Odegaard, you know, comes off for 10 minutes. Arsenal end up losing a game. They haven't got the depth that Man City have got. And that's probably why their players are shining in the team of the season sense. Look, we've got a massive problem coming up as far as I'm concerned in this team of the season. We've got three spots left, Jack. And two of them, I don't know how they fit in, really. So we've got we haven't spoken about Cole Palmer yet. And we've started to mention Phil Foden. And I've also mentioned Saka. And I don't know who plays as a striker. So, like, this is...
Is that your three? Because I just...
No, because I don't think it works.
I don't think
you can
leave...
Can that
Ollie
be
Watkins
the three?
Out.
I don't know if it can.
I don't think you can leave Ollie Watkins out. Let's just take the front three as a front three. And, like, I am dead set that Ollie
Another
Watkins
Villa argument. Hang on a second.
No. Watkins needs to be in this team. I'm afraid, in terms of expectations and exceeding expectations, the fact that Ollie Watkins leads the Premier League goal and assist combined charts with 31... He's right up there at the top of the goal charts. He's one behind Cole Palmer and two behind Erling Haaland. I think that what Watkins has done at Villa this season in terms of turning it all around and becoming that main man, and his consistency across the course of this campaign, means that there is zero arguments, as far as I'm concerned, that Ollie Watkins is not in this team. And I appreciate that you can point to Haaland having, what is it, 21 goals in 25 starts. And for me, that's a drop-off from last year. That's a drop-off. The expectations are so high compared to what Watkins has put together and how he's exceeded those expectations. Honestly, I think he's a superstar, and I will be putting my foot down on this one. I've let the other two Villa players slide because I think there were arguments to be had. And I think you could probably put up an argument to suggest that Dominic Solanke and Alexander Isak have both been absolutely incredible in front of goal as well for their respective clubs and what they've done in terms of turning around their sides, especially Isak, who, without whom I think Newcastle would be absolutely all over the place this season. He's been so cool and collected. But Watkins, for me, is an absolute lock.
You didn't even mention Haaland, top goalscorer.
I did mention him briefly, but I said it was a drop-off.
Okay, so if you're putting Watkins through the middle, then that means you've got a spot either side of him. And you've got Saka, Cole Palmer, and Phil Foden. And of course, there are other players you could talk about. I mean, Havertz, we haven't even mentioned in this conversation
Anthony
yet.
Anthony Gordon as well.
Anthony Gordon, we haven't mentioned yet.
Don't get me started on Leon Bailey.
Son?
Jared Bowen.
There are options here. Most of them are English. Amazing, isn't it? Mate, I don't honestly don't know how you do this. How do you differentiate between Saka, Foden, Palmer? Because it feels to me like they are the three that it comes down to for two spots.
Well, you could drop Martin Odegaard into defensive midfield alongside Rodri and play three behind the striker if you want. But you are adamant that Declan Rice is going in there, so that's fine.
He is.
In which case, I think you have to look at what they've done for their team. You just mentioned Martin Odegaard there, right? And you said if Saka was absent for whatever reason, they'd find a way. When Cole Palmer is absent, Chelsea don't find a way. Without Cole Palmer in this team, Chelsea are in the throes of a relegation scrap. What he's put together in a team that is completely dysfunctional in many ways this season has been nothing short of remarkable. 29 goals and assists combined. Chelsea have scored 63 goals. He is responsible for almost 50% of what this club have put together. I think that whatever way you spin this, Cole Palmer needs to be in there because what he's managed to produce individually in a team that doesn't really work a lot of the time has basically saved this Chelsea season.
Yeah, look, I agree. I think that he's more important, but Saka is also hitting his best stats. Arsenal try their best not to leave him out almost every single week throughout this season. If you play Fantasy Premier League, Saka's had a little triangle by his name because he's been a doubt for almost every game. Yet most of the time, he was put out there. I haven't been on an eye test. I've watched Arsenal at times and just been like a little bit underwhelmed, a little bit. But I don't know if that's because the rest of his team are also playing at such high levels that he hasn't needed to put in the Cole Palmer moments that have been there. This is extremely hard because the temptation is to leave Saka out of this. The Arsenal fans will throttle us.
They might. They've also got five players in this side, so they're doing quite well.
But yeah, his stats do measure up now good at the end of the season, Saka. But I personally don't think he makes the team of the season.
In terms of impact on his team, I think that Palmer outshines him in that regard. And look, you can point to the fact that Arsenal are battling for a title and Chelsea are battling for a Europa Conference League place. But I think just in terms of what Palmer has done at Chelsea, again, I can't stress enough how dysfunctional I feel like this team is. And yet he has managed to shine individually. And, you know, there was that performance, obviously, at Arsenal where Cole Palmer was missing. And it was an opportunity for Chelsea to be like, oh, we can show that we're not just Cole Palmer FC. And they got absolutely tanked. Now, okay, fine. That might not be the fault of the players that replaced Palmer. But equally, you look at that and what he's become, and he is now just very much the talisman of that club. I love Bukayo Saka. You know this. The Ealing Eusebio, hometown boy. I think he is the business. And I think he's had an incredible season. But I think, for me, what Palmer's done on an individual level probably elevates him above Saka for this spot. Again, I would have probably had them both and not Rice, but it is what it is.
Yeah, I'm just trying to look up in the stats how many times Cole Palmer's actually played on the right side of attack this season compared to his other positions. And yeah, it's fine. It's like he's played there like 12 times or so. It's a real variation on here between attacking midfield, right wing, second striker and centre forward. This guy is so adaptable and so smart at everything he does and just so cool and calm with it all too. I guess Foden's a lock-in, is he, at left, even though I'm not convinced that's where I like him the most. That's where he has to be.
It's where he's played a lot of football. And obviously we've seen him in the middle a bit this year. But with Anthony Robinson marauding down that left-hand side, Phil Foden will be able to tuck inside and get into those sort of favoured half spaces, if you will, on the left-hand side. So I'm not worried about the balance of the team down that left if we played Phil Foden there. And also, Ødegaard naturally sort of floats to the right in some ways. So that actually works quite nicely. Actually, I think the balance of this team would be really lovely across the course of it. And that is one of those things. When you're picking teams of the year, I always think there should be a level of, would this team actually function? I think it would. I think it would function quite nicely, actually, with the balance across this side. So Phil Foden can go in that left-hand side. And look, you spoke about the fact that City have a rotating cast and the players who, you know, have stepped up have often been interchangeable throughout the year, and spoke about Haaland and Alvarez and what that looks like. But Foden has really come to the fore in this season, I think, for Manchester City. And when he's delivered, he's really delivered. And look, yes, Rodri is the heartbeat. He pulls the whole team together. He's the one thing that makes it function. But in the absence of various other star components across the course of this year, I think Phil Foden's ascension to being main man and stepping up and what he's, you know, produced as an output on top of all of everything else is pretty stunning, right? 23 combined goals and assists across 31 games, 29 starts. It's been exceptional. And I think that it would be unfair not to put him in.
Okay, so I'm going to run through our 11 and then go through a couple of big takeaways from it, okay? So Jordan Pickford in goal, White, Saliba, Gabriel, Robinson at the back, Rodri, Rice and Odegaard in the midfield, Palmer, Watkins and Foden up front. Zero Liverpool players have made our team of the year and they have been challenging for the title up until basically last week. Isn't that weird that there's no one that would
you could
really...
I think you could probably make an argument for Mohamed Salah to be on
could
the right
you? I don't think
well.
You could. I don't think you could.
I mean, his output has remained very strong. And yes, the last, you know, I talked about recency bias, right, about certain players and Guardiola in particular. I think almost like the opposite could be true for Mohamed Salah. It's easy to forget how good he was over the first sort of 7 months up to AFCON of this season. And actually the drop-off afterwards has been, yeah, okay, pretty stark. But it doesn't take away from the fact that that first, well, through August through to January was stunning. And so I think that over the course of the season, yes, I think there are players that have been more consistent. He's been incredibly unlucky with injuries, but that's unfortunate in many regards.
Yeah, look, there have been times like Van Dijk, I do think, has had a good season. Obviously, Colin Bradley came in for a spell and actually really, really impressed me, but obviously not to
And Alexis McAllister, we discussed McAllister as well, but has he had a better season than the other two combined? No. I don't know.
Szoboszlai did well, considering first season. I think he's done all right. Luis Diaz has amazed me at times, but not good enough to be in this team. Darwin Nunez, I don't know anymore. Don't know what's happened again. He's fallen off a bit, but I found that an interesting takeaway. The second takeaway is this is half the England team. You've got Pickford in goal, Ben White, if he'll accept to actually play for us.
Well, that won't be happening. So that,
Declan Rice,
that one out.
Declan Rice, and then your front three, all English, and Saka as someone who hasn't made it. Going to win the Euros, mate.
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
Sorry, I just wanted to wind you up right at the end. You picked an all-English top three.
It was the moment you were like, picked an all-English team, and I was like, have we? I was like, Gabriel and Saliba don't strike music. Anthony Robinson is actually born in Milton Keynes, but obviously...
For what it's worth, I would, if this was actual real football, I'd pick Haaland ahead of Watkins every day of the week.
Yeah, but we're not picking a who are the best 11 in the Premier League. We're not picking Premier League. We're picking a who's had the best season in Premier League. And I think that Watkins has had a better season than Erling Haaland.
But what if Haaland hadn't had the season he'd had the season before where he scored a million goals?
Well, I think you just, in terms of consistency and what someone's putting across the course of the season, I find it very difficult to make an argument against Ollie Watkins. I really do. Like, I think that actually if you were arguing who's been kind of performing in spells, you actually look at Haaland's game time and you compare it more. I'd compare it more to someone like Alex Isak. And actually, they're very, very close in terms of what they've delivered this season. And I love Isak. I think he's, you know, one of the most underrated players potentially on the planet. And that's saying something because he's quite highly rated. But in terms of his finishing ability, I don't think there's many up there who are as ice cold in front of goal as Alex Isak is. And that includes the likes of Erling Haaland. I think that Isak is actually a more composed finisher. But I think when you're kind of comparing them, that's where I have Haaland pegged this season alongside Isak, which is still high praise. It's just probably not where I've got Watkins. So I think it's had the season of his life.
Yeah, mate, you can take your Aston Villa shirt off now. We're finishing up this segment. Congratulations on getting one in.
Well, there we go. Finally got a Villa player in. Jack Collins' Unai Emery love affair continues by the sounds of things. All right, we will leave the second part there. After break, we'll be back with some guru wisdom to finish this off. Don't go anywhere.
Hey, go-getters. Let Noom Sport Hydration Tablets power up your fun and keep you ready to move. Simply drop, dissolve, and enjoy crisp and refreshing flavors like strawberry lemonade or lemon lime. With 5 essential electrolytes and crafted with clean, non-GMO, vegan, and gluten-free ingredients, Noom should be your go-to hydration choice. Because when you're hydrated, you can do more, go further, and recover quicker. Shop now on noonlife.com and get ready for endless fun, because anything can happen after noon.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers. But you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.
Hey, parents. Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then, learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Welcome back to Ranks FC, where it's time for this week's edition of
Guru Wisdom, Guru Wisdom, Guru Wisdom.
Cheers, boys. DJ, what you got?
Mate, the wisdom is rubbing off on the listeners. My mind was absolutely blown this week. On Patreon, well, I had a silly moment where I deleted, or on Patreon we have a weekly show, obviously a lot of people know this already that listen, it's called Pick 11, and there's a prediction league. It's me against Jack against the listeners, who are called the patrons, and I had a long list at the start of the season of everyone that had volunteered to have a go week by week to represent the listeners, and then about a month ago I accidentally deleted the file. Never found it again. So I've been scrambling around trying to look for people every week. And then the other day, I mentioned this on the Patreon podcast. I was like, oh, if anyone wants to do Patron of the Week, by the way, give me a shout. And loads of people were jumping in the comments. And I had like 15 comments from people being like, oh, I'll do it. I want to do it. Oh, I should have done it early in the season. I was like, okay, look, you're going to have to stand out. Like, if you want to do it, find a way of getting in touch with me. And someone DM'd me and they got to have a go last week. Anyway, I suddenly get another DM through. It's from Luke Shaw, one of our Aussie hardcore Ranks FC fans. And he goes, good day, DJ. You challenge the patrons to get creative with ways to become patron of the week. So I hired someone on Fiverr to make a patron of the week song. Just need a way to send you the product as an MP3 file and we're good to go. And then the next thing you know, he sent it through to our email address. Well, just play it, Jack.
Patron of the week. Pick 11 is the game. Patron of the week. 1 coin, 10 coin, not the same. And I don't know if I'm being foolish. 1 coin bet against the top team. But it's something that I must believe in. That the patrons will always be team. Patron of the week. Patron of the week.
Oh mate, honestly, yeah. So if you didn't understand all the references, you get two bets on Pick 11. You get 1 coin and you get 10 coins. You put the 10 coins on the bet that you're most sure of, and 1 coin on one that's a bit out there. And yeah, the patrons are beating me week after week. I'm bottom of the league. Jack's second. Oh, no, you're top, aren't you?
Had a good week.
You top?
I don't know. I haven't checked this week's scores yet.
Oh, anyway, might have caught them. Anyway, you two were having a good season. I'm not. And this is where we are. So I said, Luke, that is absolutely brilliant, mate. Like, that is the sort of outside the box thinking
ingenuity.
I was looking for. Yeah,
you can't make
an actual jingle
himself
for the pod that we will use for the rest of time.
I thought it was Luke himself. I was like, doesn't sound very Australian.
Yeah, I don't know if he's actually paid for that.
It's unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Great unbelievable. Stuff. Anyway, get yourselves over to Patreon, everyone, because Luke will be making his predictions on Friday's show to see if the patrons can indeed beat me and Jack in the prediction league this season. And we've got a big summer coming on Patreon. Obviously, you can still get, if you haven't had one, you can get a free trial. So come and sign up. We've got a lot coming up. I've got episode 2 of Ranks Juniors probably next week coming. Dylan is ready for his second interview and Reese is going to be introduced to the show. So that will be interesting, if not entertaining.
Ranks Academy.
And then beyond that, pretty soon I'm going to start dropping a few transfer shows. tends to do those solo shows across the summer transfer window. I did one in the January window too, where I'll do like sum up as much as I can of what's going on and keep you all informed across that. And then as well as all the transfer stuff, we're going to have extra Euros shows, and I'll be in, out in America for the second half of the Copa America. So we might get some proper coverage off me for that as well, mate.
It looks like I'm going to be out in Germany for the first week of the Euros as well. So we're going to have some on the ground coverage, all sorts of things going on over on the Patreon. It's also the home of our Friday wrap up show, where that Pick 11 jingle will be now used every single week. But this week it's going to be looking back at obviously all the Europa League action on there as well. It's the home of UE Ultras, the Europa League show, all sorts of exciting stuff over on the Patreon. We'd love to, for you to come and join us.
Absolutely, yeah. Come on, gang.
Get involved. Get involved. And thank you very much to Luke for that wonderful jingle. Really,
oh, brilliant. Yeah, I love that. That wisdom. He's so wise to get that into us. Well done, mate.
Thank you very much to, yeah, Guru Wisdom from Patreon Luke. Exactly. Not me, Luke Shaw, we should probably address, but no. our very own. And perhaps the better one, considering this season so far. And with that, I think it's probably time for us to call it a day. So all that's left for me to do is say thank you very much to Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
I've been Jack Collins. This has been the Ranks FC podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back first thing on Thursday morning, last thing on Wednesday night, depending on where you are, after the Champions League with Champions League Takeaway, looking back at all of the action across both of those semi-final first legs. Very exciting this week. And there'll also be a Europa League show and Europa League roundup over on the Patreon. Again, we'd love you to come and join us. The link is in the description. Thank you so much for joining us as ever. And we'll see you very shortly, Rank Squad. Take it easy. Peace.
Hey, go-getters. Let Noom Sport Hydration Tablets power up your fun and keep you ready to move. Simply drop, dissolve, and enjoy crisp and refreshing flavors like strawberry lemonade or lemon lime. With 5 essential electrolytes and crafted with clean, non-GMO, vegan, and gluten-free ingredients, Noom should be your go-to hydration choice. Because when you're hydrated, you can do more, go further, and recover quicker. Shop now on noonlife.com and get ready for endless fun, because anything can happen after noon.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers. But you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.
Hey, parents. Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then, learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.